Welcome to the PDPW podcast, brought to you by Professional Dairy Producers, dairy's professional development organization.
Always good to talk with you, my friend. This is Tom Thibodeau, Distinguished Professor of Servant Leadership at Viterbo University, talking to all of our friends and colleagues and professional dairy producers and all those who may be interested. I'm interested in talking about is how to live like a monk. When I was in college, I was in pre-monk training. I was at St. John's University and College of Minnesota. I was very much enamored by the life of the monks living in community. I would go and often observe them in their prayer. I would participate with them in worship. I had them as teachers and was very much attracted to this way of life that actually began back in the second and third century when people left the distractions of Constantinople and Rome and Cairo and went out to the deserts to live more simple and solitary lives. Others joined them and soon they began communities. They were called the Desert Mothers and the Desert Fathers. And people from the large cities would come out to visit. And because these people lived very simply, they lived in community, they spent a life of solitude and prayer as well as hard work. They had insight and wisdom and knowledge that comes to people who are comfortable with silence. And this way of life has been passed down to us for over 2,000 years. We've been hearing a lot recently in all of the literature. We certainly hear it in working with young people about mental health distresses. We hear about the distresses of the depression and anxiety and being overwhelmed. And I've been listening to this for the last 18 months and came to the question, but what are we doing to teach people to be more resilient, to be able to embrace well-being and a healthy lifestyle? And so I began to look upon it in terms of my own life. I grew up in a family in which we knew depression firsthand. My mother suffered from postpartum depression. That was part of our lives. But what is it that one needs to do to remain healthy under extreme circumstances sometimes that we find ourselves, or even sometimes the less extreme in terms of the demands of everyday life? So I began to do some research and to study. And I discovered a course taught by a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, Justin McDonald, and in his class, it's kind of live like a monk. He had spent time in his growing up as a practicing Catholic, and then after graduation, had time to live for 3 years as a Buddhist monk. And he began to reflect on what he's learned. He has his doctorate in Asian religions, and was at the University of Pennsylvania noticing the same thing that I have, that students are oftentimes overwhelmed and do not know how to cope with the number of challenges that face each of us today. So I decided, well, I can do this. I have a level of knowledge and experience with the monastic living. In fact, for a number of years, I thought of myself as a street monk. I don't live in a monastery, but I have adopted many of the practices that a monastic life has to offer. It's a life of discipline, if you will, a life in which you follow a level of routine. One of the things that we find that causes a great deal of anxiety is having too many choices, being overwhelmed with what is it that one wants to do next. So I began to think about this, and I teach a class on the theological and philosophical perspectives of servant leadership. Robert Greenleaf, the founder of the servant leadership movement, who was the vice president of AT&T Corporation in the last 10 years of his life, talks about in his book, Seeker and Servant, of how each leader needs to be a spirit carrier. How do you nourish the spiritual life? And if you look at any effective leader and people that we recognize, all of them have had a strong spiritual life. They carry the spirit of people. So people easily think of Mother Teresa, or they think of Martin Luther King. Well, we can say the same thing about Gandhi, a woman who was an amazing woman, was a justice for the poor, was Dorothy Day. But you look at the same thing in terms of Nelson Mandela, the Dalai Lama. You look in terms of Archbishop Desmond Tutu. All these people who lived under oppression, all these people who became an advocate for people who suffered, had a deep spiritual life. Well, it doesn't just belong to an elite few. It's available to all of us. But you have to live consciously, deliberately, and intentionally. In a marvelous book, Medieval Monks Can Tell Us About Living in an Age of Distraction, the author goes back and studies historically the role of the desert communities all the way throughout the Mediterranean to the west coast of Ireland, where people gathered in these communities in which they honored silence and solitude and communal life and a simple way of living. And what she begins to uncover is that we think that it's only the technological age, the age of social media and cell phones and all the other things that become available to us is when distraction has come about. And quite honestly, it's always been with us, and people have always had to find different ways in which to deal with distraction, those things that pull us apart. One of the things we understand now from research is that a distracted mind is an unhappy mind. In a study done at Harvard University, they asked people if they put an app on their cell phone, and then people were contacted randomly and asking what were they thinking about and what were they doing. And what they found, in over 60% of the time, people were thinking about something different than what they were doing at a present moment, meaning I'm actually in one place, but my mind's in another. Well, this causes all kinds of anxiety. This causes all kinds of levels of uncertainty because we are not present to the presence that's right in front of us. The present moment is never intolerable. What's intolerable is having our body at 11 o'clock on a Friday morning and my mind at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning thinking about what I'm going to do next, or having my body here in the beginning of March and thinking about what's going to take place in June. How is it that each of us can develop a level of being present to the presence? Well, Professor McDonald saw this at Penn State, and he devised a number of things that people were to commit themselves to. And I looked at it and I thought, well, what is it that's possible for our students? What might we be able to do in the course of a semester in order to live and lead like a monk? Well, here it is. When people signed up for the class, they had to commit themselves in this way. It starts, each of us will commit to write one journal entry once a day, every day, from January 20th through the end of February. So each of my students have been journaling each and every day, sometimes twice a day. And then we all had to pledge ourselves to this. During this time, we will limit our access to alcohol, limit our access to processed food and refined sugars. This is the virtue of temperance. If one is to live a healthy life, one must have healthy food. And one of the things we find is that processed food just is not good for us. It does not provide the calorie, the nutrients, or the energy that we need. Sugar may give us a bump, but then it's followed by a corresponding low. The same thing what happens with caffeine. Limit your access to alcohol. Why? Alcohol is the disturber of sleep. And so very important to say, what is it that I'm putting into my body? Which is very much related to what is it that I put into my mind each and every day. The second pledge that everybody had to make was to limit personal spending to $50 a week or less, to not just buy mindlessly, to take people's ideas off of, you don't have to find the newest detail, the newest clearance item on Amazon. One woman said she had to give up her Kohl's cash. She realized that she was a clearance shopper and she would buy things when she was bored. Well, we find that happening in terms of the American consumer. Do you realize that Americans spend more money on storage units than we do going to concerts, plays, or movies? Think about it for just a moment. Our entertainment is spending and hoarding rather than being engaged with one another. What is it like to live a simple life, to not be buying stuff, to use the stuff that I already have in a very important way to understand 40% of all food gets thrown away before it even gets to the table. We look in terms of ourselves, how many times in the course of a week do we not finish leftovers? The reason I'm mentioning this is that live simply so that others may more simply live is a ethical tenet that comes to us from the Quakers, but all of us are better served. And when you go to a monastery, when you go to where people are living within a religious community, they do not waste. Why? Everything we have is a gift. A gift produced by the hands of others, and therefore we must be stewards of what we receive. Everybody in the class was to reflect, contemplate, pray, and meditate each and every day for at least an hour. Contemplation, as we talked last week, is the virtue of taking a long, loving look at the real. The opposite of contemplation is reaction. Haven't we seen way too much reactionary behavior? Are we not seeing too much reactionary comments or the way in which language is used inappropriately in describing the events of our days? How much more important it is, and we are all taught this, to think before we speak, to slow down, to pay attention, to not use a lot of words. Let our actions communicate to others what we believe and what we are committed to. And people were telling me how important this has been each and every day as they've slowed down to kind of get rid of that toxicity in their life. And one woman said to me that her husband said, "What's going on with you?" She said, "What do you mean, what's going on with me?" He said, "You seem to be much more joyful and at peace." He said, "I've just been paying attention. We haven't had an argument this past week." And she smiled and she said, "Well, I'm trying to change my way of thinking. Instead of reacting to what you say and becoming defensive that oftentimes lead to arguments in the home, I'm just trying to listen more intently." And he looked at her and he smiled and said, "Thank you for loving me so much." She said that it never would have taken place had I not been committed to the discipline of slowing down, paying attention, being quiet, and letting go. Fourth commitment, everybody was committed to 7 to 8 hours a day of sleep and rest. Well, we know from the Gallup organization, if one is going to be an effective leader, you need 8 to 9 hours of sleep a night. People don't nearly get that. When I ask people how often they sleep, they oftentimes say, well, maybe 4 or 5 hours. When I ask people how many of you sleep with your cell phones on at night, everybody says yes because they got rid of their landlines. But what is it like when subconsciously you know that you're on call 24/7, 365? When is a time in which we get away from the phone, get away from the alarm, and just allow ourselves to sleep and to rest? Every medical facility has a sleep disorder clinic. You're more in danger of being hit by a driver driving tired than a driver driving drunk. How many farm accidents happen when people are fatigued? How many medical accidents happen when people are fatigued? As people are working longer hours and competing longer distances, there's more opportunity for accidents. How important it is for us to sleep. I love the word nap. Nap. You just say the word nap and you feel better. What do we understand? Those people who take a nap on a regular basis live longer. Sleep, a nap, rest is the dishwasher of the mind. It's a time to get rid of the toxicity and the worries. How many people are running on empty and then kind of fuel their tank with Red Bull or caffeine or any new thing that they can put into their mouth just to get a little boost? And yet, what are the long-term effects on our health? More importantly, what are the long-term effects on our relationships? Next, people were to commit themselves to refrain from idle chatter or conversations, to practice the discipline of silence. My father was an attorney, and he was eloquent as he stood before judge and jury. But when he'd go to parties, he'd be very quiet. Introverts, and I am an introvert, when we go to parties, we enjoy the camaraderie, but we most enjoy a conversation with maybe one or two other people in the course of an evening. And people would say to him, "Greg, why are you so quiet at parties?" And then he said, "You never have to take back anything you listen to. How many of us have said too much and listened too little? How important it is to refrain from idle chatter or conversation, to practice the discipline of silence. In that kind of idle chatter or conversation takes place on social media all the time. I tell people that if you want to be healthy, you have to limit your access to technology. The cell phone is not good for our brain. It's not good for our children, and we know this to be true. And isn't it amazing? We even have captured it in the language in terms of idle chatter and idle conversation. It's called dumb scrolling, participating and reacting to things that really don't even affect our own lives. The next commitment that people had was to work with one's hands for an hour every day. To work with one's hands 1 hour every day. People who work with their hands on a regular basis have much less incidences of dementia or Alzheimer's. Why? There's a direct connection between our brain and our hand. We know that to be true. Look at somebody who really concentrates as a carpenter, as a plumber, somebody who really uses their hands as a mechanic each and every day, and you recognize their ability, which is that comes through fixing things, seeing how things work, taking them apart. How important it is for those of us who work in offices every day to get out of an office, away from a keyboard, and to do something with our hands. Isn't this part of our own DNA and the evolution of human beings? Always had to work each and every day. The monks would call this ora et labora, to work and to pray. How important and significant this is. And what happens, how often in terms of physical labor does your work become a prayer? The Shakers, who made that most beautiful furniture, had a wonderful saying, hands to work, heart to God. Well, I would believe that many of our farmers, many of the people that were listening to us right now, are people who work hard each and every day with their hands. And even the working of hard with one's hands, it becomes a meditation, a time for contemplation and concentration. What people were to commit themselves to was to be joyful and humble in each of their personal encounters. How important it is for us to nurture joy. If people are suffering from depression and anxiety, what is it like to come into contact with somebody who's joyful and thoughtful? Somebody who can be delightful, if you will. One of the things I do other than teach at the university is I run a soup kitchen, Place of Grace, 3 blocks here from Viterbo. We have a food pantry that we share foods with people who come on Tuesdays afternoons, and on Thursday afternoons we open up the pantry, but then we also serve a dinner from 5 until 6. And people from our neighborhood and the community, it's a community dinner where everyone is welcome. Everybody has the opportunity of being fed. This is one of those things that sometimes is hard to hear, but oftentimes people who are poor only receive poor quality food. So we try to stay away from processed foods and high levels of sugar and salt and provide people the best meal we can each and every week. And people gather and there's just a sense of relief and joyfulness. Everyone is accepted. Hospitality is making space for the guest, and all of us realize that we learned this very early on going to our grandmother's house. Whenever we sit down, she made us all feel welcome. There always seemed to be enough to eat. We just try to recreate what it's like going to grandma's house. And one of the gentlemen who comes every week has a new joke. I look forward to it, and I just laugh uproariously because it's just a gift of joy that I do not receive anyplace else. It's a gift that this gentleman is able to bring in every week. He is a delight. Well, can that be said about all of us? Are we delightful? Are we pleasant to be with? Can we all be a little bit more joyful? His little joke last night was a guy calls up to work and says to his boss, I can't come to work. And his boss said, why is that? And the guy says, I'm having trouble with my eyes. And his boss said, well, what's wrong with your eyes? And the guy says, I can't see myself coming to work. Oh, it's a corny joke. It's a play on words, but it's absolutely delightful. Can I bring a little bit more joy and delight into each and every conversation that I have? Each of the people was to spend time writing in a journal and then to be willing to share some of their insights with all of us in terms of their use of language and words that resonated with them. Very fortunate that we had two of the members of our class who come from First Nations, one the Ojibwe people and one the Ho-Chunk tribe. And how important it is to realize that people in their own language have stories and understandings about the work of the spirit. And so with the appreciation of language, we are able to enrich the lives of each other. The poet David White says, "One good word is bread for a thousand." And at the end of the class, and this is what I'm engaged in right now, meeting with everybody for an hour just to talk about their experience. And all of them are talking that they're living with a greater amount of peace and self-awareness. All of them have been kind of amazed at the insight that has come when they've been journaling, or the thoughts that have come into their mind while they're working with their hands. All of them have realized that this way of life has had a positive relationship on their personal relationships. They're listening to their children, to their spouses, and to their friends much more deeply. They realize they do not need a cell phone in their hand all the time, that they can limit their access to technology, still be very much aware, and get their work done. All of them realize that if you focus on joy, you get more of it. And all of them report being much more joyful, celebratory, and grateful. Live and lead like a monk. This isn't New Age. This isn't the next idea. This isn't innovative. This is old school. People have always understood that when you come together and spend time to contemplate, it helps to build up your community. Your community, therefore, together, has helped us to live much more committed, deliberate, and intentional lives. Live like a monk. Nurture solitude, silence, and peace in your life each and every day. It'll be an adventure. It will take discipline. It is worth the effort.
Our thanks to Tom Thibodeau for today's message. Tom, a distinguished professor of servant leadership at Viterbo University. And for archive podcasts and more on-demand programs, and for more on the professional development for today's dairy producer, head to PDPW's free website at pdpw.org. Until next time, have a safe and productive week.